coming up on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast.
One of my favorite quotes, actually, by Arthur Koestler on how he defines creativity is that creativity is the defeat of habit by originality, right? And that's the same thing. We can say that for that's what the healing of depression is. It's the defeat of habit by originality. Instead of being in that deeply ingrained rut, we're choosing an original thought, something different. And I do think that this is the next sort of wave. This conversation around psychedelics and creative cognition is going to be such an important topic because for anyone listening who has struggled with depression, when it feels like you're in this like small dark room where you're just going round and round with self, and then you have these experiences with psychedelics where it's like you're coming out of the room and you're like, wow, there's this really big, beautiful world out there. Now we can really start leveraging these experiences to think bigger, to actually contribute and dedicate our lives to finding innovative solutions to the incredibly complex challenges that we face.
Welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast, a conversation series with leaders in the psychedelic community, specifically for therapists, healers, retreat leaders, and passionate enthusiasts. Presented by Maya and hosted by me, Eamon Armstrong. Welcome back to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. I'm your host, Eamon Armstrong. Could enhancing creativity be the key to healing mental illness? Laura Dawn of Grow Medicine makes a compelling case for the value of psychedelics for enhancing flow. Our conversation begins with an exploration of eldership and indigenous concepts of reciprocity based on Laura Dawn's recent trip to Colombia. She gives us practical tools for enhancing creativity and makes the case for psychedelic healing through optimizing flow states. We conclude with how to prevent burnout amongst healers, facilitators, and leaders in the psychedelic space. Laura Dawn hosts the Psychedelic Leadership Podcast and is the founder and director of Grow Medicine. She has a master's in science, specializing in creativity studies and change leadership, and is at the forefront of exploring the intersection between psychedelics and creative cognition for leadership development. And now, here's Laura Dawn. Laura Dawn, welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. I've been familiar with your work for a while, and actually, you've been nominated for this podcast a couple of times.
Oh.
So there have been people, there have been people who have said, get Laura Dawn on the podcast. And that makes a lot of sense considering we're here to support people who are using psychedelics to support other people. And your work in leadership and creativity is very apropos for that audience. So I'm sure I speak for many of the folks listening in this very moment when I say thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Eamon.
Just to start our conversation, I wanted to check in with you about a recent trip that you went on. I'm aware that you got to meet with the Cogimamos of Colombia. When we're talking about leadership, particularly in the space of sacred plant medicines, psychedelics, the leadership of the elders is something that our culture sorely needs. And the elders can kind of help us see past more restricted paradigms around the use of these medicines. I'm curious if you wanted to share with us, what are some of the things that you learned during your recent trip to Colombia?
Oh my gosh, that's such a huge question because, yeah, I've really been deepening into my relationship with various elders in my life. And I was invited by Grandmother Jyoti and other indigenous elders from the Mother Earth delegation to go and meet with the Kogis and the Mamos. And the Fountain is a nonprofit organization that Grandmother Jyoti is spearheading along with Mindahi Bestida. And so I just had the honor of not only really dropping in with the Mamos and the Kogis and just learning an enormous amount, but being able to be surrounded by these other indigenous elders who just every conversation was just so rich and just had so much depth to it. I think one of the key insights and takeaways, and just for people listening who aren't familiar with the Mamos are like the older brothers of humanity in a certain way. You know, we can frame it that way. And They're just incredibly tuned in and tapped in to just a different dimension of reality. You know, they work with divination in just such an incredibly awe-inspiring way. And through divination, they choose a Kogi child to become a Mamo. And when they are chosen, they actually go into darkness for a very long time. So some of the children go into a cave in total, complete darkness for many years, at least usually 9 years, sometimes 10, 11. I met a Mamo who had been in complete darkness for 28 years. And so, I mean, just you can't even imagine what that possibly could do to your level of consciousness. And so there's like a different level of awareness that happens, I think, through that process, and one that I don't think I'll ever even scratch the surface of understanding. And they're very far removed in a very real sense from our Western ways of living and being. And a lot of what they do is they work to maintain the balance on this planet. And I think right now, I think many of us would agree that we are living in extremely unbalanced times. And Grandmother Jyoti said something to me once that really struck me, you know, that this time of great upheaval, you know, the Kogis say that we're in this 13-year cycle and that the ending will fall into a new beginning in 2026. So we're in 2022. We've been going through really enormous amounts of change. We still have 4 years left to go. A couple of the elders I was with are prophecy carriers. And one elder uncle from Greenland had expressed that, you know, things over the next few months are really going to amplify and be increasingly intensified. And I think when we really look at the state of affairs with what we just went through with the pandemic and the economy and the inflation is at all-time highs and everything's becoming more expensive, people are getting so squeezed on every level. And there's just so much upheaval that's been going on right now. And I do think, I have that feeling that things are going to intensify. And it's interesting to think of this notion of like, what does that mean of the ending falling into a new beginning in 2026? And one of the things that Grandmother Jyoti has pointed to, and I've had the honor and privilege of interviewing her several times now for the podcast, she says like this time is not personal, you know, like we take it so personally and we cling so much to our belief systems around like right or wrong, this side or that side. It's such a time of division and polarization. And I think this also really weaves into the work that we do with plant medicines, where we're really just shaking the neural snow globe and it really can show us how to not grip so tightly to what we believe to be true and our sense of self and our sense of identity. And so there's this notion of this greater unfolding is happening right now. And the Kogis and the Mamos carry stories from the beginning of time. You know, it's not like they're like tracking all the science, but they carry origin stories with them. They have stories about the first 5 mass extinctions. And from different various accounts, we can say that it's very possible that we will go into another 6 mass extinctions. Some scientists say that we're really on the precipice and that this one is predicated by human activity. And so on the one hand, it's like we urgently need to wake up, but we also urgently need to slow down and pay attention and tune into a different dimension of reality and learn how to attune our senses to that and also not take the grand unfolding very personally. So it's like, yes, we need to show up and take action. But I think what all of this time points to and what I've really learned from the Kogis and the Mamos about balance. And they talk a lot about this notion of sacred reciprocity, and they offer pagamentos, like payments to the earth, because we are taking so much from the earth right now. And they have embedded in this worldview what it means to give back to the earth, for example, and how to make these offerings, these payments to the earth to maintain the balance. And I think that that's just a conceptual framework and a worldview that we just don't have in the West. We go to the grocery store and we receive food from the aisles, but we're not tending to that cabbage plant or to that cucumber plant. We're just we've become accustomed to a different tempo, a different rhythm that's very, very fast paced, where we're forgetting about this other notion of tending to plants. And I think that that's actually been one of the core lessons and understandings for the work that I do with my primary plant teacher, which is ayahuasca, where the core curriculum and teachings that I've learned from that plant has actually been through tending to the plant, to actually showing up to cultivate a relationship with that plant in the ground. And that to me has been the primary teaching. And I think that everything inherent, like all of the wisdom that that plant medicine has given me in my life, actually comes primarily from that core foundational relationship. So it's looking at the ways of this balance, like sacred reciprocity and this notion of right relationship that is a core concept across many different cultures, including I see a strong overlap between the indigenous understanding of right relationship that might emerge in South America, that's very similar to the concept of Ho'oponopono from Hawaii, for example. It's like, how are we in right relationship and sacred reciprocity? And reciprocity is a big topic right now, you know, and what we know and what we, the deeper level of understanding of reciprocity is not transactional, which is so much of what we're coming at it from this very transactional perspective in the psychedelic space, but it's foundationally relational. So I know it's a really long-winded answer, but we're really zooming out and looking at this notion that there is a much greater unfolding happening right now. And we can learn to step into alignment, vibrational alignment with that greater unfolding. Remember not to take it so personally. It's not about us on the individual level. And when you actually zoom out and think about, you know, we know from a scientific perspective that in 200 million years, the Earth is going to be swallowed by the sun. So when I think about that, I'm like, this is very important to be alive right now. What a miracle. And also just to hold it lightly and to enjoy the process of making direct contact with reality, with this incredible, you know, miracle that we have called consciousness, and looking at all the ways that we're shaping our reality with consciousness. So for me, the key teaching was like, how do I get into harmonious alignment in my life, like deep, deep inner balance? And it's actually, since I went to Colombia, unfurled and spurred just a catalytic change because, I mean, gosh, can I just keep going here, Eamon? I'm just like...
Of course. Please do.
Yeah, there was something that really unlocked within me during my time there with the Mamos and the Kogis, but also from experiences that I had with these other indigenous elders, including Curikindi, who is an Ecuadorian shaman who grew up deep in the jungle with 38 brothers and sisters and became a master maestro at the age of 8 years old. So it's like spending time with people like this who have such a different embedded worldview. And he said something to me on the last day that really impacted me. And I felt something unlock within my body, within my heart. And he sort of offered me this like verbal transmission and then sealed it with an ikaro. And he said to me a lot of things, actually. But one of the core things he said to me was that I need to strengthen my protection of my field, and that he can see that there's different ways that there's energy leaking because of fear. And part of that was really up for me, actually, in that time, because I've been going through quite a lot with this launch of Grow Medicine, and I'm supporting Indigenous-led initiatives that are really focused on plant medicine conservation, and I'm a white Caucasian woman leading this project. And there's been a lot of moments of like, is this okay? Is what I'm saying okay? Is who I am okay? Because there's a lot of judgment and a lot of this big conversation around, you know, indigenous work and reciprocity and skin color. And that's real. And I want to just acknowledge that. And so it had been really deeply impacting me. And he pierced this veil and saw my energy body and expressed to me, you know, I need to strengthen my protection. And I said, like, what does that mean? What does protecting myself look like? And he said, without a hesitation, he just said, when you fully trust in your path, you're fully protected. And I thought, wow, that is really profound wisdom. And I went back to Austin, and I had just spent like an 8-month stint in Austin after living on the Big Island of Hawaii for 10 years. And I'd been living off grid, growing my own food, totally off grid for almost 20 years. I haven't lived in a city for almost 20 years. And then I went to Austin after going through a pretty significant divorce after 10 years of being married. And I decided from that experience with the Kogis, I had already known within myself that living in a city was deeply unbalancing for my nervous system. And so I left Colombia. I went back to Austin. As soon as I landed, I booked a flight. And in 3 weeks, I packed up everything. I sold everything, gave everything away. And I moved back down to Costa Rica, which is where I've been for the past month. And that's actually been the core teaching that's been coming through the deep medicine work that I've been doing, just perched up on this mountainside overlooking this incredible valley, about balancing my nervous system and the importance of down-regulating my nervous system as like a physiological way of coming into balance, coming full circle to like the core teachings of the Mamos and the Kogis. And how do we get into real core alignment between our minds, our bodies, and our hearts, and be able to slow down and breathe and regulate our nervous system, and to really attune ourselves to the rhythm of nature. And when you look at nature, and I look at these mountains, there's definitely a distinct frequency in this valley. The mountains are just being. They're just being, they're breathing, they're moving very slowly. They are moving, but they're moving very slowly. So really just tuning into a different dimension right now and learning how to come into deep, deep balance so that I can open my channel and really come from that place of deep embodied alignment.
I wonder if you could share with us a little bit about your perspective of the current mainstream paradigm of psychedelics as medicine versus what you've learned through indigenous teachings and also your own exploration of psychedelics for creativity. How do you see psychedelics best innervated into the mainstream at this moment?
Okay, so well, let's come back to the creativity piece in a moment. So that aside, which I would love to dive into, but just the initial part of the question about my perspective around, you know, Western medicalization of psychedelic medicines versus, you know, a more indigenous perspective. I just want to acknowledge that I am a white person, and so I don't want to speak for indigenous people. So I'm just going to really speak about my own experience and what I've learned actually first and foremost from 25 years of working directly with plant medicines. And so for me, I think the biggest shift is this mentality of showing up to the doctor's office and taking, even using this word, like taking a pill or taking something, fix me, make me better. And so there's a sort of a certain way of, I think, giving our power away in that equation. And I just want to acknowledge that for some people, like to have access to it, and if that's the entry point, then bless it. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say that's wrong or bad or judge it, because I just think everyone is going to have a different entry point, and psychedelic medicines aren't for everyone, which is like the other thing that I just want to presence here. But I think one of the things that I've learned, especially when we talk about reciprocity, and the thing that I've learned through tending to my own plants and also through really just showing up at the altar over and over again, is this notion of how can I dedicate my life to the awakening of humanity? Show me how to be a vessel of service. Show me how I can give back in devotion and dedication to the wisdom that I'm receiving. So I feel an enormous amount of gratitude for the amount of wisdom that I've received from my plant teachers. And I dedicate my life to this path in the way that I live, in the way that I walk, in the way that I interact with other people, the work that I do, that's very fundamentally service oriented. I mean, we live in a financial economy, so I'm also, you know, receiving financial contributions for the work that I'm doing, because that's part of the energetic exchange, but coming from it from a place of generosity of spirit, which I think is really, really important. So I think like what the sort of core concept of reciprocity, when we bring that into the work, the personal practice, some people have a personal practice. People who are listening to this might have a personal practice with one or various plant medicines. But shifting from this mentality of like, oh, I went and I took ayahuasca, like I took ayahuasca last weekend, versus having this understanding of like, I was able to show up at the altar and be able to engage with the wisdom of the spirit of this plant medicine, and I receive so much, and this is how I want to give back. This is how I want to contribute to humanity. And I think that might take time for that mental shift. It's the same thing that we're talking about, like with the wisdom of the Kogis and the Mamos, is all about tending to the earth, giving back the pagamentos, and to maintain that balance. And I think we live in an incredibly self-absorbed society. What can you do for me? How can you fix me? How can this pill or this medicine make me better? Which is, it's okay. We're like, a lot of people are suffering enormously right now. So when we're in deep depression, which I've experienced in my life, sometimes that's sort of the first rung of the ladder of like, somebody please help me. Like, please, I'll do anything. It's not that it's bad. It's just like, how do we get into more of the, what can I do to give back after that? Or not even give back, but like give first.
Well, and I think a lot of our listeners are folks who are really interested in giving back. And many of our listeners have had experiences with these different medicines, with these different teachers, and feel called, like yourself, to be in right relation and to be in reciprocity. And so I think what that looks like is an evolving experience where, as you learn more, as you connect with elders, as you get more sort of teachings, your ability to be in right relation and reciprocity expands as your consciousness expands. So I really applaud that. And I think that I just want to double tap that for our listeners. But I also want to get into this idea of creativity and some of the study that you've done. A huge part of how we can give is through deep study, through spending time with materials that others might not. And you've done a very deep study of creative cognition in the context of psychedelics, and that's a big part of what you teach and offer. And I think the idea of stimulating creativity is not different than therapy in a sense. The more creative we are, the less depressed we are. Creativity, creation, connection, these are the opposite of a lot of the mental health experience of being shut down and shut in and closed. So let's talk a bit about creative cognition and some of the works that you've done in graduate school and what you're offering now.
Okay, I love diving into this. So thank you for opening up this massive can of worms. I hope you're ready. So for the past couple of years, it's been 2.5 years. I actually just finished graduate school last month. So I'm very grateful to be on the other side of that really intensive experience. And it was a master's in science in creativity studies and change leadership. And when you come into this program, it was an international program. And when you come in, you have to have a focus. And so, because when you think about this word, like, what does creativity really mean? We could define creativity in so many different ways. This is like very, you know, ethereal concept in a certain way. And so when I came in and I spoke to the dean at the school, I said, I only want to come into this program if I can dedicate my whole degree on focusing on the intersection between psychedelics and creative cognition. And they were like, yes, absolutely. Come on in, let's do it. And I've been super grateful to have just an enormous amount of support from the faculty, because I think a lot of people are recognizing just how much psychedelics are entering the mainstream. So to make this really relevant for people listening, and for people who, whether you have a personal practice or you're supporting other people in guide work or your facilitation, or you're interested in facilitation or integration work, if you have some kind of leadership role in the psychedelic space, then one of the core takeaways that I would love for people to really get from this conversation is that the lens through which we look at psychedelics influences the outcomes of that experience. So what I essentially did for the past almost 3 years was I looked at the existing literature through the lens of creativity research. And so right now, I mean, we know, and there's a good reason for this, that 90% of the conversation in Western culture around psychedelics focuses on the main question, the main entry point, saying, how do we work with psychedelics to help reduce mental illness? And there is a good reason for that, because it is the pathway, the easiest pathway towards FDA approval. We live through a mental health crisis. A lot of people need an enormous amount of help. So one of my curiosities, and especially when we look at anecdotal evidence, we don't have to look very far to see the ways that psychedelics have spurred an explosion of creative expression going back to the 60s. We can see this through countless pieces of incredible writing and music, the Beatles, Aldous Huxley's The Doors of Perception, to today, where Steve Jobs said that LSD was one of the more profound experiences of his life. Carey Mullis came out and said that he wouldn't have won the Nobel Prize for PCR, the polymerase chain reaction, if it weren't for LSD. You know, I've had this conversation with Dennis McKenna now a number of times. And Dennis, who's just such an earthly poetic, who has said that psychedelics are like the neurotransmitters of the Gaian mind, telling us to wake up. And he says that, you know, at the core, psychedelics are tools for teaching us how to think creatively. And so the entry sort of point of the conversation, it's low-hanging fruit. I don't have to make such a compelling argument to say that psychedelics can help spur creative cognition. But when we look at actually all of the scientific literature, there's been very, very few studies that have looked at that. Part of the reason is because creativity is this very nebulous thing to define, and so are psychedelics. Psychedelics are like this Swiss Army knife with infinite add-ons. So the way that we look at psychedelics, they're both very, very hard to pin down and really put your thumb on. So when you combine them together, of course, there's going to be fewer studies. I think there's only been about 10 studies done on psychedelics and creativity. A few more if you just add the studies that threw in one question about creativity. So what I essentially have done is, like, I went back and I've really looked at a lot of the existing psychedelic literature through the lens of really deeply understanding creativity literature, which is what I focused my graduate degree on. And I started formulating a very strong case that says that actually, despite the fact that we weren't really looking at psychedelics and creativity in that study, that we can still make a very strong argument that that research points towards the ways that psychedelics help to support creative cognition. And that actually the same underlying mechanisms for which psychedelics are efficacious in the treatment of depression, for example, are also the reasons that help us think more creatively. And so essentially what I've been doing is connecting hidden dots that are actually have been staring us in the face quite blatantly and making a very strong case for that, but then also building curriculum around it and saying, when we look at the outcomes, like when we look at asking the question, how do psychedelics help alleviate depression, the way that we set up set and setting, for example, is going to be in a specific way to solve for that issue. And if we instead say, how do psychedelics help enhance creative cognition, the way we think about set and setting changes. The way that we think about preparation and integration completely changes. And so that's what I've been focusing an enormous amount of time on. And to just like bring an example and to make this more relevant, and we can get into some of the curriculum and like really lay out some of the landscape, which is just super fascinating to cover. But if you think about depression and anxiety and PTSD and addiction, and for those of you who read Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind, we know about this mental rumination. It's like, I've personally struggled with addiction. I think everyone listening to this podcast has probably struggled with some bad habit that they've tried to change before. And we know that beliefs become deeply entrenched. And every time you think a thought over and over again, it becomes more hardwired into the brain. And it's like those sleds going down a snow-covered hill where it's like magnets, right? If you think that thought over and over again, it's easier to have that thought again. And psychedelics help to sort of shake that neural snow globe so that you can think a new thought. So if you're experiencing addiction, it's like being a hamster in a wheel where you're going round and round and round with the same thought over and over again. And psychedelics help us to sort of step off that hamster wheel and choose a new thought. So when you look at it from that way, it actually is the exact same thing with creative cognition. We're choosing a different thought. We're choosing to think a novel thought that is useful. That's actually one of the core definitions of creativity, is to have ideas that are both novel and useful for solving the problem at hand. And this is so overlooked in the psychedelic space, which is why I just am like rolling in this field of just being able to like, you know, really enjoy the exploration of it, because it actually points to a lot of tools that we can not just apply to becoming more creative and having greater degrees of creative expression, finding novel solutions to the challenges that we face, but we can actually use these tools and apply them to people who are working with depression and PTSD and addiction, for example. So yeah, the core like takeaway here for people listening is that there are other ways to approach our relationship and other lenses through which we can look at psychedelics, and that lens fundamentally and foundationally influences how we choose to show up and engage with them.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I think about, so the fMRI studies back in 2014 that were so groundbreaking that showed the reduced activity in the default mode network. We think about that a lot, that the default mode is the home of this rumination and there's reduced activity there. But what it also showed was activity between regions that don't usually form networks. And we're not talking about that as much. So we're talking about, okay, let's reduce the activity in the default mode network to kind of reduce the symptoms of depression, anxiety, OCD, that sort of thing. But what takes its place? And there's this great Buckminster Fuller line about how you don't change by opposing, you create a new paradigm which makes the existing paradigm obsolete. So perhaps a focus on creativity through psychedelics could be focusing on what you're trying to replace the rumination with, which is these novel connections, these novel ideas, perhaps creativity in community settings, connection through creativity, through creating art and that sort of thing. So I love that approach as something that can potentiate healing in addition to being other ways of looking at engaging with psychedelics beyond healing.
Right. Well, and I think that this is really the next frontier of the conversation, because I think as millions and millions and millions of people who are struggling with quote unquote mental illness, I don't love that term, but it's consciousness is on a spectrum, right? And so we're just looking at the different expressions of optimization, essentially. So when you look at it, it's really all the same underlying neural mechanisms between depression and thinking more creatively. So it's really just that spectrum. One of my favorite quotes actually by Arthur Koestler on how he defines creativity is that creativity is the defeat of habit by originality, right? And that's the same thing. We can say that for, that's what the healing of depression is. It's the defeat of habit by originality. Instead of being in that deeply ingrained rut, we're choosing an original thought, something different. And I do think that this is the next sort of wave. I do think there's a few other big waves in the conversation in what's to come in the years in the psychedelic movement, group therapy being one of them, moving from like individual therapy to group therapy. But I do think this conversation around psychedelics and creative cognition is going to be such an important topic, because for anyone listening who has struggled with depression, when it feels like you're in this like small dark room where you're just going round and round with self, and then you have these experiences with psychedelics where it's like you're coming out of the room and you're like, wow, there's this really big, beautiful world out there. And like the experience that I had many, many years ago where it was like, okay, now what do I do with my life? Now we can really start leveraging these experiences to think bigger, to actually contribute and dedicate our lives to finding innovative solutions to the incredibly complex challenges that we face. And so my path and what I feel also like my dharma and my creative calling is to create this curriculum to support leaders of a new era so that we can actually combine these powerful mind-altering experiences with deep levels of mental training, but also embodiment practices, so that we can fundamentally walk in a different way on this planet and perceive differently and uncover solutions so that we can live more harmoniously and really be the creators of this next chapter of human history.
I love that. And as you're talking about embodiment, maybe we can get into some practical tips that could be valuable for the people listening. One of the things I know that you speak about, which to me is synonymous with creativity, is
accessing flow state. I mean, a flow state is such a joyful experience of creativity and production and connection. And so maybe we can talk for a moment about some practical tools for engaging in flow states and creative cognition for yourself, but also for helping facilitate that for others, potentially in the container of psychedelic healing, but also just maybe in a recreational experience or an experience of ritual. Do you have some practical tools for accessing the creative cognition that you've been studying?
Yes. Well, okay. So I'm going to take one step back and look at divvying up of the creative landscape just to help frame where flow states fits into the conversation. So Mel Rhodes created a model in 1963, the four P's of creativity. Through my thesis in graduate school, I built on that model and created a fifth P, and I built it into what we call the systems change model of creativity. And this sort of fits into what I was just saying about really the leveraging of creative cognition to actually create a better chapter of human history, right? So also weaving back into what we talked about at the beginning of this conversation around like that service and dedication to this path. So four P's of creativity, because when you talk about creativity, it's like, wow, we could talk about so many different facets of it. So there's the creative person, like characteristics of the creative person, okay? And so I'll just name them and then I can just say a little bit more about them. So we have the creative person and then the creative process, which is a process that we go through to uncover creative solutions. And there's many different layers that we can look at of the creative process. So James Taylor had a model around preparation, incubation. So illumination, where we're going through these times where we're really like focused, we're in convergent cognition, which means like finding one solution to a problem, we're like more narrow focus. And then we go into, okay, I'm going to go for a walk, I'm going to relax my mind, go into more of that incubation phase, we're more in like divergent. We can also think of it in terms of spotlight consciousness versus lantern consciousness. For those who have read Michael Pollan's book, this is another very strong parallel that we can make between waking consciousness and psychedelic states. So we have this arc of a creative process that can span hours, but it can also span lifetimes. Like look at Einstein's creative process over the years. And he had very strong go-to methods for how he ignited his own creative process. And all of the great thinkers really valued this notion of incubation. And incubation is very synonymous with the psychedelic state as well, where we can go into the subconscious, for example. So we have the creative person, creative process, and then we have what we call the creative product, which we can think of as like the outcome, for example. So the creative person or people engage with a process, and then that creates an outcome. And so that outcome is often what the definition of creativity points to, is like, is this outcome novel and useful for solving a problem at hand? And then we have what we call the creative, it was actually coined the creative press, like the environment, but in my model, it just made sense to redefine it as place. So we have the person, the process, the product, or the outcome, that's how I think about it, and then the place, the environment that we're in, which is such a fascinating area when we start looking at the ways that we engage with our space that can enhance creative cognition and all of the subtle cues that actually influence the way that we think. And there are some incredible studies that have been done that are just like so fascinating to look at. Like if you put your desk in front of a window with a very far landscape, far open expansive view, that's conducive to what we know as divergent thinking, coming up with more ideas, thinking more broadly. So this is also an overlap with a really interesting field of study called embodied cognition, how my body moves within the space and how the shape of the space influences my consciousness. So when we start talking about building transformational spaces, temple spaces, can we design the physical structure and how does that physical structure literally mold and influence the shape of my consciousness? And then I added a fifth P, that's creative practices. Okay. like creative thinking skills, for example? What are all of the ways? And I took this Mel Rhodes model. I know this is getting like a little technical, but just indulge my intellectual mind here because it was just way down the rabbit hole of academia that actually has an enormous amount of real world applicability. So if you think about person and place, what does that initially make you think of in terms of like one of the core concepts in the psychedelic space?
Well, set and setting, of course.
Exactly. So I basically took Mel Rhodes' model that my professor, Dr. Puccio, who I'm just such a shout out to him and the mentorship that he's offered me over the past few years, he took that 4Ps model and he created the systems change model of creativity that looks at how the process engages with the people, that creates outcomes, that then creates innovative change, that then changes society. Okay, so like how we're working with this process for innovative ways to literally the betterment of society. And so I took that model, I took the 4Ps, I developed it into the 5Ps, and I created another model that looks at overlapping set and setting with this systems change model of creativity. And I built on that model of set and setting. So I extended our understanding of the psychedelic model of set and setting. And then I added the process that we go through, the arc of a journey. And then I also added the outcome that we're aiming towards, which is what I started with this whole conversation. Like the question that we ask actually influences the outcome. And then it influences how we think about the space that we're in, preparation and integration. And then I added curriculum around all of it. So how we can engage with medicine, set up the setting, work with preparation and integration, creative thinking skills, leadership development skills to aim for an outcome that is more in alignment with the North Star of what we want to create in our lives and for humanity. And so that was a big landscape sort of layout so that we can understand when we start talking about flow states. I'm going to just keep putting you on the spot here, Eamon. So I hope you're paying attention. So flow states would fall under which P, do you think? Person, process, place?
Well, of course, I want to say process, but I think also person too. I think it's definitely process in terms of the how of what we're doing, but I think it's also person in terms of the actual brain state of the person engaging.
Absolutely.
Is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
How close am I?
So well, I like to think in Venn diagrams for those of you who might have tuned into my psychedelic leadership podcast. I'm always throwing up Venn diagrams and looking at how things really overlap and interrelate. And that's why, you know, when you look at the overlap and intersection between psychedelics and creativity, one of the things that we could point to is adaptability in the face of change. Like there's so much at the intersection. And the same with the creative person and the creative process. There's such an enormous amount of overlap there. There's distinct differences, but it's helpful to think of it in that way to also look at the ways that they overlap. And there's a lot of different lenses that we can put on top of that. So we can look at that overlap through an evolutionary biological lens. We can look at it through a neurochemical lens. We can look at it through a neuroscience lens. And that gets way more fascinating, right? Where we start looking at, okay, this again, full circle to answer your actual initial question is, can I combine what I understand about psychedelics and combine what I understand about the neurobiology or the physiology of flow states and other building blocks to create a practice that might help me unlock these flow states so that I can enhance creative cognition? And the answer for me is absolutely. Can I point to like hard science? I can connect dots, but there hasn't been enough research done on it. I actually just interviewed Connor Murphy from the Flow Research Collective, and he said, oh my God, we need to research the Laura Dawn protocol for tapping into flow states. And so for me, it's looking at the combination of movement with microdosing, with medicine, and with meditation, and with music. And for me, that combination together, there's different building blocks that look at like, okay, what is the cascading effect, the neurochemical cascading effect of a flow state? And when you understand that, can you start sort of like reverse engineering that experience in your brain? For example, we know that movement and exercise enhances endorphins. And that's sort of the beginning cascading effect of a flow state. And same with music, dopamine. So when you understand that cascading neurobiology and the neurochemistry that happens there, then we can start saying like, okay, I can combine this with this and these building blocks. And after many, many years, it's been over 10 years of really like playing with it and cultivating a practice, I've found what works for me. And what I do in my programs, I run a what I call microdosing mastermind, is I sort of like lay out the information and lay out the buffet of options. And I encourage people to go for it and to find the sequencing of practice that works for them, right? And in the way that that works for them. So for me, it's working with microdosing in the morning and working with movement to music. And I do kind of high intensity movement and dance also is a big part of that. And then I drop into a specific kind of meditation practice called open focus awareness. And then I'm also playing music and my own music that I like to play. So I have sort of an arc of a morning practice that at least sets the foundation as a launch pad for me to step out of my own way so that when I sit down and create content, it's coming from a different place. We know the benefits of flow states, selflessness. It's like big data for the mind, as Steve Kotler says, timelessness. And it also is a deeply profound, gives us a deeply profound sense of connection to meaning and purpose in our lives. So it's really just looking at all of these different practices that we can combine. And I will just put the disclaimer, microdosing has side effects and there are risks to microdosing. Please consult with your higher guidance doctor, whoever you feel most inclined to consult with before engaging in a microdosing practice.
Yeah, thanks for that disclaimer. We got to throw out some disclaimers from time to time. I love the idea of being intentional about creating the conditions for flow. And I give a shout out here to Jamie Wheel. I love his new book, Recapture the Rapture, where he puts out his protocol. I think a lot of people are beginning to put out these protocols that are helpful. And when I think about our audience, people who are using psychedelics to support the healing and flourishing of others, what it makes me think of in this moment is, you know, how the healers themselves need to have space held for them. The healers themselves need to be encouraged and nourished and thrive. And so I think a lot of people who are in the healing arts, particularly related to psychedelics, do have practices like what you've described, morning practices and practices that evolve, perhaps microdosing. But I think it's helpful for us to kind of look at that audience specifically. We want to nourish their creativity as they take care of others. We want to nourish their growth and flourishing as they're taking care of others. So this is just a moment for you listeners who perhaps maybe self-sacrificing a bit in service. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about people who are in that space and how they can have a more complete experience, a more resourced experience of serving others.
Yeah, I think it's everything, you know, and I think there's actually a lot of burnout going on in the psychedelic space right now. It's been interesting to sort of track conversations with a lot of people in the space and noticing, and I'd be curious to hear your take on this since you interview so many people too, Eamon. Just that it feels like we're post major boom in this little bit of like a lull post peak. And there was just this feverish, frantic pace where, you know, everyone's just trying to establish themselves in the space. And it's like, whoa, okay. And then there's sort of been this consolidation, especially a lot of like the venture-backed companies noticing a lot of consolidation happening and people being burnt out and needing to slow down and take time. And I think that that's really the core of all of it is like, are we really, really, truly staying behind the medicine? And what I point to in the programs that I teach is psychedelic-oriented leadership development, which I think of as like ceremonially informed leadership. So if you have a personal practice with medicines, are you really weaving that wisdom into the fabric of your everyday life? And so many of the people that I know, so much of the core of everything that we do is actually in our personal practice. That if we're not, this is so interesting, we're weaving this core concept of balance and, you know, starting with the Kogis and the Mamos, that I think that that's such a profound amount of wisdom of, are we filling up our own cup? Are we taking the time to go within, to slow down? The practice of mindfulness is, for me, synonymous with plant medicine work. It's like, the medicines are teaching us how to focus our awareness and to pay more attention to what we're paying attention to in our lives. And there's so much that we can say about that. But I think that there is a lot of self-sacrificing going on in the space and a lot of that feverish pace that we've all been sort of running at. And that's why I run the microdosing mastermind, is because it's like, actually committing to a solid foundational daily practice is not easy. It takes a lot of dedication and devotion. And so I run my programs for leaders in the space and for us to come together as a cohort with 40 other people who are dedicating to a daily practice and what that really looks like and how are we weaving the wisdom from our plant teachers into the way that we show up and serve. And we know we can only take people as far as we've gone ourselves. If there's not a foundation there, and that foundation is what allows us to root in centered alignment. There's also like a somatic physical piece to this concept of right relationship. You know, when we talk about being in right relationship, I always say to people, like, first and foremost, you need to get right with yourself, right? How are you in right relationship to the food you're eating, to your relationship, to your body, to your mind, to the wisdom of your heart, to the wisdom of your plant teachers, to this earth that we live on? So that's the practice of like actually coming to center. And I think I'd be hard pressed to say that you can really walk from that centered place, embodied, centered place without a daily practice. Maybe for some days at a time, but long, long stretches at a time. I know I certainly can't. I really need to root in that slowing down, activation of the parasympathetic nervous system, meditation practice, to really be able to weave in the wisdom from my plant teachers and lead from that place.
Yeah, I definitely feel that the daily practice is so important. And it's like compound interest. You do it every day. And then over time, it builds and builds. I wanted to honor your question for me, having interviewed a lot of people about the psychedelic renaissance, such as it has been. And of course, there's been a massive slowdown. There's been a massive slowdown in investment in the space, which has led to consolidations, which has led to more sort of scarcity around people who've been building careers in the space. It's been really interesting to watch. In many ways, you can look at it as a kind of winter. I like that metaphor because I find it to be very valuable to look at life through what is appropriate for seasons. And what is appropriate in the harvest period is not what is appropriate in the depths of winter, which is not as appropriate as when the bamboo shoots start to come up. And so what I think about with the psychedelic movement right now is that this is a great time for going inward, for developing deeper relationship to practices. I think it's helpful to not get spooked around scarcity. There are certainly startups in the space that are not sustainable, but that was going to happen anyway. But I think for the individual practitioners who make up the body of our listeners, this is actually a beautiful opportunity to slow down because the pace was very feverish. And our elder friends let us know that we should be moving slower, that we should move at the speed of trust, that we should follow the seasons. And so I think right now, this is actually a useful opportunity. Let's be sure that we are resourced, and maybe some of us need to be getting some work in some other spaces for a little while to support our long-term sustainability of a practice. But I think there's an opportunity in this slowdown. I've certainly feel that in myself, that there's an opportunity to take a little pause, reevaluate, and let's get the foundation of this modern psychedelic movement right. So that's how I'm looking at it.
Oh, I so appreciate that perspective. And you were just so well-spoken. I just love the way you articulate yourself. I really appreciate it. Yeah, and that's exactly what's going on in my reality too right now. You know, I made the move to Costa Rica. I'm in this super cute cabin just perched up on the mountainside, overlooking the valley, taking a lot of space to do deep inner work right now and attune my nervous system to a different rhythm because the past few years have been... And it's okay. It's like being super activated. I've just been like full on creating so much, still rooted in a daily practice, but really just graduate school and the podcast launch and running a bunch of programs and the launch of Grow Medicine. And it was really after the launch of Grow that I was in Davos announcing it, you know, on a global platform, that I felt so honored and grateful. And also when I came home from that, I was like, okay, if I don't slow down immediately, I'm going to burn out and I need to tend to my cup. I need to fill my cup right now, tend to this vessel. And just being here, I've just been so grateful to have the space. And also what you said is like, it's really important to avoid this scarcity mentality. There's so many people starting to work with psychedelics for the first time. The movement is not going anywhere, folks. And the more that you actually, do you know the saying, you know, go slow to go fast? It's like, we got to slow down to speed up.
Yeah, it's like slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Yeah, I love that. And even my last deep dives with the medicine over the past couple of weeks, she's been opening up this deeper layer of understanding this embodied awareness of my nervous system and doing like really deep inner work on my nervous system. And I've had moments where I felt like I was actually tapping into the collective nervous system and being like, wow, okay, there's just like on the planet right now, there's a lot of anxiety. And so this is also where my foundational practice of Eastern philosophy and Tibetan Buddhism come into my life around how to surf these waves of change. If we were to throw a Venn diagram up of psychedelics and flow states and Tibetan Buddhism, there's just a plethora you could explore at the intersection of those.
Yeah, we are so blessed to live in time of such rich traditions and to be able to intermingle them and study deeply and to find that synthesis between. It reminds me of, again, this sort of like getting out of the default mode, which perhaps the default mode collectively might be sort of global capitalism, and how can we create these novel connections? And how do we have the creativity of problem solving where we can draw on multiple things? And I think that in order to do that, it requires deep study. You can't just read an article about Tibetan Buddhism and feel like you're going to be able to synthesize that, because the deeper study creates the richer wisdom, which creates more sustainability. And there's that great Jung quote, beware unearned wisdom. And I think that as we're in perhaps a bit of more of a winter, it's a time to earn some more wisdom. And I love the work that you do, because I feel that you are deeply studied. And through your podcast as well, you're studying. You know, you have incredible guests on your show. I just want to give a big shout out to your podcast, which is going to be in the show notes. And that's the Psychedelic Leadership Podcast. But you're a perennial student and constantly exploring. And I think that that really allows you to offer two of the things that you're most known for, which is your work in creativity and also your work in leadership and modeling that. We're getting to the end of our conversation today. So I'd like to end this podcast with giving you an opportunity to speak directly to our listeners who are working in many cases in the healing arts and are using psychedelics to support others. But I'd like to just give you a chance to speak directly to them and offer any wisdom or congratulations or perhaps words of consolation in this moment in our movement.
Well, I think that there's been some real core concepts that we've been circling around throughout this whole conversation around finding that deep sense of inner balance. This wisdom of staying behind the medicine, I think, is so profound. The first time I heard that, I was like, oh, that just landed in my heart in such a profound way. And that points to the importance of establishing a daily practice and also establishing a peer-to-peer support group that you can hold space for each other's integration and each other's process, I think, is also really, really important. And I think, yeah, having elders in our lives is also really important, you know, that we can have that kind of support and be able to learn from the wisdom of our elders. And I aspire to embody a full head of gray hair and become an elder on my own path. And I do hope that I get to live that long. And just trusting, you know, moving at that pace of trust, and that everything is happening in divine timing, and that there's no amount of wisdom that I can say that's not already really in the wisdom of your own heart. Like, we're all just tuning in to what the wisdom is that is being offered to us in the moment. And so I'm just so grateful for these conversations. I come alive when I get to share and geek out about all these intersections of psychedelics and creative cognition. And again, that other core concept of that these tools are incredibly multifaceted. So how are we perceiving them? Even reframing a question, that's a creative thinking skill. What are other questions that you can reframe in your life that might fundamentally change everything? And sometimes we have to let things fall apart to come back together in a new harmonious way. We are entering through this cocoon of metamorphosis, I think, on many, many different levels. And the medicines are offering us this very profound training ground to cultivate resilience in the face of change. And that's one of the core teachings of Eastern philosophy, is that everything is impermanent, everything is unchanging, So we can let go and just, instead of fearing it, really just enjoy the ride, open to the beauty of it. And let's not take it all so seriously. That's that other piece with Grandmother Jyoti saying, it's not so personal. It's like the sun is going to literally swallow the earth at a moment in time. So it's like, are you laughing? Are you enjoying? Are you engaging and connecting? And are you being kind to yourself and others? I think that's really, really important.
I loved that we shouldn't take it all so personally. I mean, that is a daily practice. Talk about a daily practice. Yeah, try not to take it personally. Laura, Dawn, such a pleasure to have you on the show. Can you let our listeners know where they can find more of you? We've spoken about the Psychedelic Leadership Podcast. All of this will be in the show notes, but let us know where to find you on Instagram, your website, what you're offering, and how people can connect with you more.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I also have a free 8-day microdosing course on my website, lauradawn.co, that gives really all the foundational basic information on how to cultivate microdosing practice, sort of for 101 beginners. I also have a lot of free guides on that are great for people who are supporting other people and for people who constantly ask about, like, how do I find a shaman or a facilitator? I have 45 questions to vet your shaman, facilitator, retreat center. I also have integration guides. They're all free downloads on my website, lauradawn.co. And links to my podcast there. And also, you can find me on Instagram at Live Free Laura D.
Live Free Laura D. Laura Dawn, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your wisdom and all the work that you do for this community, for this space, for this movement. And I look forward to seeing you more in the conferences and the gatherings of our people. So, such a pleasure. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate your time as well. And I would love to have you on my podcast as well, Eamon. I think we would have just such a fun conversation.
I would love that. That sounds like a great idea. Yeah. Let's do that.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Laura Dawn.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please join the Psychedelic Therapy Facebook group to talk about it. You can also share it with your friends or leave a review on iTunes so more people can discover the show. The Psychedelic Therapy Podcast is presented by Maya, a platform designed to help psychedelic therapists manage and measure client journeys. You can head to mayahealth.com to learn more. The show is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide mental health or medical advice. Thanks for listening.